This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up this hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And just keeping the good and the bad theme of this, this is what happens when we do previews of every single NFL team. And if you've been following along in this show, every week we've been focusing on division, the good and the bad. And this is a divisional week in the AFC South where we've got two bad and two good. And the Texans are in the bad. They're used to be in the good. And it wasn't that long ago that they not only were in the good, they were in the very good. But now they're a team that's trying to build on a four-win season using yet another new coach in Lovie Smith, who gets a return into the NFL as a head coach. He replaces David Culley, who was hired on a five-year deal, was basically, many of us thought, a placeholder. It ended up being that way. Look, when they fired David Culley for four wins, honestly, what did they think David Culley in his first NFL stint was going to do with a team that was pretty much stripped of any star power, right? No, they were moving on to somebody else. Culley come in. I can't wait to sort of get the really nitty-gritty details of exactly how this went. But you pay out handsomely, right? You fire a guy, you pay him out handsomely. Thanks for your service, but this is the way we're going to be going now. And so now Lovie Smith is going to be the head coach. We talked about this yesterday. There are two ways the Texans could have gone with this. They don't have a solid, star-riddled roster that is ready to be bursting up the seams with talent and potential wins. No, they're rebuilding. So what do you do when you rebuild? Who guides the rebuilding? Do you want some 37-year-old young offensive coordinator on the Sean McVay tree? Do you want a young defensive coordinator that is being built in the same style as, let's say, a young Bill Belichick or whatnot? Right? What would you want? Or do you want what the Texans have, which is sort of a steady hand, a guy that's been around a long time, coached in the league a long time, coached in college, you know, a veteran guy that has seen a lot in his NFL career? Maybe this is the right choice for the Texans as they try to improve on a 4-13 season. But nevertheless, there really isn't a lot about this team that screams, hey, look at us in 2022. Or is there? We'll dive in a little bit more. The good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up, and then we'll get into LeBron James's contract. Also, there is a new documentary that's out on Netflix. I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen the early buzz on Manti Te'o and the catfishing scandal.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. It's a throwback Thursday. We've been celebrating 1969, the ending acts of Woodstock in upstate New York in 1969. So we've got the good, we've got the bad, we've got the dumb. But here's something really good. With their newest unlimited plan, everyone's welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 a line per month for four lines with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Their best priced unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family. The network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required. Unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on Welcome Unlimited and are eligible only for select promotions. Includes domestic talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. All right, let's get to the good of the day.
Good of the day. He's back.
He's back.
Tiger Woods is back on the cover of PGA Tour 2K23.
Yeah, I saw this. Yeah, well done, Tiger.
Yeah.
Way to survive the scandal that took him off in the first place.
I think it's that plus everyone else is leaving.
So. Right. Yeah, who are you going to put on?
Who are you going to put on is right.
And I don't know, does Scottie Scheffler move video games?
No, I mean, I think you've had...
Are we going?
I think they've had Rory on there, but...
Yeah, they had Rory.
You know, they had Jordan Spieth.
Have Jordan Spieth?
I'm trying to think who's left on the PGA Tour. But yeah, no, Tiger Woods, I mean, obviously, you know, still the most iconic face in all of golf, and I think he's going to sell a bunch of games now.
Yeah. I do. I've always liked golf video games. I do too.
I've always enjoyed. I remember the original Wii.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Where you had like, you had the Wii Sports and you can do golf there. It was three holes. But I went ahead and did the Tiger Woods.
I did too. I remember that. Yeah.
The Tiger Woods Wii where you had a swing like a, you had to swing it accurately. And all I remember is I had my stepfather and my brother do it as well. And my stepfather, who was a golfer, had a golf scholarship to, that put him through college. He took it serious. And that game lasted. We played one game, and it lasted like 2 hours at least. Maybe
yeah,
30.
Yeah, I remember playing. You got to play some cool courses like Whistling Straits yeah. and some other, you know, St. Andrews. I think. Yeah, it was kind of fun. Yeah, I find them, though, I want golf games. Like, I always hear people like, I got it, and then I shot 56.
Right.
At Augusta National. I'm like, that's not golf. Like, John Madden had to make Madden football, had to make it harder.
Yep.
Like, he told the guys over and over again, got to make this harder. It's too easy to convert fourth downs. That's not football. Let's figure out. He goes, I don't know the computer stuff, but you guys know the computer stuff. You guys pop it up, make it back, make it harder. And they made it harder. And golf needs to find a way to do that. They need to find a way to make it much more difficult because I don't want to play a golf game where I could birdie every hole just
right.
by simple like XXYY, line it up, make sure it's perfect, and then boom, it's in the hole. Like that's silly. But man, those things are kind of fun. I remember like in 2012, I think, or 11, one of those years, they finally got Augusta National in a video game. Augusta National had always been like, nope, you're not coming to laser this thing. No, no, no. And so you couldn't play it. The only way you could play Augusta National in video games is if somebody designed it on one of those computer things where like, here, we give you a course architecture program so you can design your own courses. And people took it upon themselves to do it. And then Augusta said, no, they finally got an agreement, but they had to be the cover. They had to be the main feature, not Tiger Woods, nobody else. It had to be Augusta National, part of EA Sports, and they did. And I remember buying that the day it came out because I was into golf video games, and of course I love the Masters, so I wanted to play it. But yeah, I'm glad Tiger's back on the cover. I like that.
And what I like most about golf games too, especially as graphics are getting better, it's almost like you're watching a window.
Oh, I know.
I know. I mean, it's getting to the point of ridiculous.
I don't understand though. Like, I see these games and they show like 10 courses. Like, why wouldn't there be 50? Like with these hard drives and these, I mean, again, I'm not a computer guy, but why couldn't I buy a PGA game where it's like, we have 100 of the best courses in the world on this thing? Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because like, hey, buy the course pack online. So I get that. But I mean, you should have a library of like 500 courses that you can play, a complete PGA Tour season. So yeah, good for Tiger Woods. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is, and it's, you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent as each day goes on, the curse of Joey Gallo.
Joey Gallo. Okay.
So back on, I think it was August 2nd, the Yankees traded Joey Gallo to the Dodgers for, I think, a minor leaguer or a pitching prospect or something like that.
He never really caught on in New York.
He didn't catch on, and he had as half as many strikeouts as he had at bats.
Yeah.
Now, he is still continuing that trend.
Oh, I gotcha.
Right? He's still, you know, striking out at an alarming rate. But, and this is where the curse of Joey Gallo is coming in. Since that day, the Yankees are 2-11, and the Dodgers are 11-2.
Wow. Wow. Some statistician figuring that out.
And Joey Gallo is hitting, is bumped his batting average, which was a meager like one something with the Yankees, up to 261. And he has three home runs with the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. Maybe Mookie Betts like dancing in the dugout like is something people are like, this is fun. Like or when they get here, it's a blast.
Or, you know, I mean, it could be this too. It's like we know that the National League and American League, even though very similar, are different animals still.
Yeah.
And maybe he just couldn't convert his game to American League. I don't know. I really don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know what it could be, but, you know, hey, I'm happy. It's not really
the
bad
Yankees,
for me.
The Yankees won last night on a walk-off grand slam, and they won by one, which means they trailed by three going into the bottom of the 10th inning, which means they okay, sometimes you get a walk-off grand slam because the game was, you know, the game was tied, and then it's like 8-4 and 11, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, the game was tied, and they managed to get bases loaded, and somebody hit a walk-off grand slam, and they only needed the one guy on third to cross the plate. The Yankees need all four guys to cross the plate on that walk-off grand slam to win the game. Like, that's how bad it had gotten. Like, what a desperate team now. Like, the Rays score three runs, and they think, all right, we're cruising, and then Donaldson hits a walk-off grand slam, and the Yankees go on to win. Ugh, this team is really struggling, really struggling. Yeah, that could have been another terrible loss for them last night.
They're not looking that good.
No, and listen, they're going to still win the AL East, but the Rays were creeping up. If the Rays had won last night, they would have been seven back. Now, it's a lot of games. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of games. But we still have a good month to play. And if you're just if you start picking up one or two of these, before you know it, it's like you're only up four with 2 weeks remaining. And all of a sudden, you could lose the division.
It's also the fact, I mean, yes, yeah, seven-game lead is still huge.
Still huge. Still
but
huge.
It was the fact that how the Yankees were losing at an alarming rate.
They were up by like 13 at one point. They were cruising. Remember how good they were?
We already put them in the World Series. You kidding me?
Best record in baseball. The run differential was incredible. Pitching was fantastic. Now their pitchers are getting hurt. They can't bat. Giancarlo Stanton's not in the lineup. It's not worked out. But, Joey Gallo, well played. Well played, Joey. Go have more fun in Los Angeles.
Hey, he's having a good time.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. That's what I said. It's not really bad for me.
right. What is the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day is not really dumb. I didn't really know where to put this. I find it funny and yet at the same time tragic.
Okay.
All right. And I'm sticking with the Dodgers here. So the Dodgers are playing the Brewers. Joe Davis and Nomar Garcia-Para, they're the television guys for the Dodgers.
Yeah. And Davis is the new Fox guy, too.
Yeah.
He's the new Joe Buck.
Well, we'll see.
I shouldn't point that out.
Yeah, not yet. Anyways, the Dodgers sports reporter, David Vasse, who we've had on the show before.
Oh, okay.
A couple years ago. David Vasse, I guess, was very, very eager to go down the slide. Brewers Park?
Yeah, it's
everyone knows the slide I'm talking about, that big yellow slide that's in the outfield.
It used to be Miller Park, but now it's like American Century Field or something like that.
Bank had to ruin it.
Yeah, somebody else came in and bought it.
But that big yellow park, that Bernie Brewer, right? Or is it Bernie the Brewer? Is there a the?
Am I from Milwaukee? I'm sorry. Did I ever live in Wisconsin? In the years that we've done this show, have I ever told you
you had a layover once in Wisconsin. So Bernie Brewer, he's the one who famously slides down at every home run ball. But here's the video of David Vasse going, or not the video, the sound of David Vasse going down the slide.
All right.
Bassey's been talking for 3 days about going down the slide here in Milwaukee. I've never heard somebody so excited about doing anything, and David did do it today. Watch.
All right, here we go. Holy crap! Holy crap! Holy crap! Holy crap! Holy
crap! Was he on a roller coaster? What are we doing? What is that? It's a children's slide? What is it?
I guess you go down a lot faster than you think. And I think he was thinking it was going to be like the slides at, you know, his local playground where, you know, you kind of got to scoot yourself down the slide.
Oh, okay. So he
off on this one, apparently. So bad that I said it was funny because it's fun to watch when announcers can't stop laughing. So Joe Davis and Nomar Garcia-Para could not stop laughing. Then they throw it to David Vasse, like, how was the slide? And David Vasse holds up a wrist that's covered in a cast because he broke his wrist on the slide.
He broke his wrist on the slide?
Yeah. When he hit the wall, he hit it pretty good. I mean, he's holding his hands and goes, hey, guys, I do my own stunts. Like Tom Cruise.
Wow. So good job.
He ended up with why I didn't know where to put this. It's not really dumb, I guess. I don't know. I get a lot more credit to that mascot now going down the slide, Bernie Brewer.
Bernie Brewer must have mastered it or something because
he's always pumping his fist.
That's dangerous. Look, we grew up on metal slides that were just oven pans in the summertime.
Yep.
With nothing down at the bottom.
And short shorts,
in
by
short
the way.
Shorts, yeah, by the way. Who came up with that? But this, I've always seen it. It doesn't look daunting. Is it? I'd love to know the angle of descent now, like not to get all physicky and everything. But like, I'd like to know, like, is this like a 89% slide, which is pretty much straight down? Like, what's the angle of this slide? 70 degrees? Like, what are we talking about?
Fast enough that when he hit the padded wall, I got to put that in padded wall.
Padded wall, he still broke his wrist.
Still broke his wrist.
Good God. Godly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I like a thrill ride every now and then, but that guy sounded like he was deathly afraid of what was happening to him.
Now, I know he was sliding down on a potato sack. I don't know if that makes
you have to take a potato sack down that thing?
I guess, I don't know if you have to, but maybe to get the full experience, because maybe mascot costumes don't slide down that well. Right. I don't know. But yeah, broken wrist.
Is it like, you ever been on one of those water slides that are like, oh my God, I'm going down that?
Oh, the one
like
that
one
still
of those?
Freaks me out is you go down like a big drop and then it shoots you up.
Oh God.
And then you stop and you come back down. But you're like in a tube with like, or you're in one of those big rafts with like four other people.
So you get air in the tube?
You don't really get air, but you go, it's like you slide up this ramp and then you come back down the same way you were sliding up and you go down a different part of the slide. But see, here's the issue, right? Every time I've gone, I've always gone with my boys, and obviously I'm the heavier one. So I always end up going backwards.
Yeah.
That's not a fun feeling.
No.
I'm like the one that's, looking down at everyone. And then as we're going back down, after we went up, as we're going back down, the raft turns to make sure that I'm going backwards as well.
All right, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at this slide now, and it's, it looked to me like a simple little... It's high, but it looks like just a simple little turn, like a little.
Hey, now, are you watching the?
I'm not watching the video, but I'm just looking. I'm looking at the images, and I'm like, okay, it looks like one of those curvy slides where they, it looks like it flattens out a little bit. So I didn't think it was a high speed thrill escapade.
But here's the part of it that makes me laugh is because David Vasse is holding a camera, and when he's looking down. When he's at the top of the slide and looking down, getting ready to go down,
right?
You're looking. The outfield seems really far away. Feels like, I mean, maybe that's the oh my god. Besides the speed, is that you're looking at the outfield and it's like, oh my God, if there was a player down there, he'd be the size of an ant. Why am I so high?
I got you. Okay, that makes sense. I got you. All right,
broken wrist.
That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1969 Woodstock. It's our Throwback Thursday today. The closing acts of Woodstock, as everyone had gathered, will then soon depart on this date. Last date of the big music festival back in 1969. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. We've been talking concerts this morning, your favorite concert in honor of the closing of Woodstock in 1969. We got the Houston Texans. Joel Blank will join us in hour number three from the Killer Bees at ESPN Radio in Houston with Jeremy Branham. We'll talk about the Texans again, 4-13. I don't think there's going to be a lot of... it's going to be a lot better than last year. I think it's going to be about the same. But we'll see. Maybe there's some other things that have been brewing with the Texans. That maybe there's a little bit more optimism that it might be just a little bit better. But they're not a playoff team. But we'll see. They can get six wins or whatever. But I think the same questions for this team are the same ones we've done with, like, the Atlanta Falcons and the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Jets and teams like that. Well, like, what kind of team will they be? They might not win a lot of games, but... Are they going to be a difficult out? Are they going to be tough? There's so many things to like, and if they put some things together, it actually could be a better season than people think, even if they're not in the running for a wild card spot at the end. Who knows? Is there possible to catch lightning in a bottle and be a team that is I don't see it, but then again, the NFL is a weird beast. It certainly can do those things. Speaking of the NFL, I did not see this, but I did want to bring it up. Are you, Ron, interested in the documentary on Manti Te'o and the catfishing scandal from 10 years ago? I know the big. I did the same thing. I thought. Yeah. I don't know.
I had brought this up a couple weeks ago. I think before my trip from The Good, the Bad, the Dumb.
Right.
Because I brought it up with two sports documentaries that are coming out. One I really want to see, and then there's this one. And this one, I don't know.
I don't either.
It's just a one-off, right? It's just one. Because you can't stretch this out into a bunch of episodes.
No, here's the thing. I like sports documentaries on monumental things or stories that were really interesting that I may have missed, right? So if you give me a documentary on a junior hockey team in Canada, I may go, ugh. But if you say there's scandal, there's corruption, there's violence, a town in tatters. Like, if you give me, like, an angle of intrigue, then I may watch it, even if I know nothing about it, right? Even if I know nothing about it. Then there are ones where I go, well, I definitely want to see the documentary of that when it comes out in 10 years, right? How that all, the people talking about being a part of that Malice in the Palace or something like that, where we really put it in some sort of documentary context, even if it's sort of biased or angled in a certain way. Fine. This doesn't fit either one of them. This unfortunately doesn't fit either one of them. And here's why. Everybody knew the Manti Te'o story who followed sports back in 2012. He was dedicating a season to a girlfriend that had died of leukemia. It was part of his image. And then we later found out that that girlfriend didn't exist. And not only did we not, then we found out that, well, she didn't exist, but he had also never met her. And he was catfished by somebody impersonating a girl to entice him. So Manti Te'o had this sort of image in his senior year at Notre Dame and a Heisman Trophy run at that, that he was dedicating his season to a dead girlfriend. That narrative didn't exist. And so when it started coming out that he was, that again, did he make this up? Was he a con artist? Then he got catfished. Is that really true? Then, you know, somebody on the other side of the catfish situation said that he was pretty sure Manti Te'o knew that this was a phony girlfriend. All of those things started to change the image of Manti Te'o, right? Started to change his image. And for years, he sort of became this mocked athlete despite his incredible talent. But in 2022, is this documentary needed? Are people still like, oh, Manti Te'o, how disgusting was that? Or are we like, you got catfish, what are you going to do? I don't care. Is the documentary explanation of this necessary in this day and age?
I don't think it is because I think we've moved past them.
Guys out of the league.
I mean, I wouldn't even have thought of him.
You know what I mean? He's not playing anymore. He's off to his post NFL career life. He never was a major player in the league. I don't know if this I don't know if this catfishing thing had anything to do with it, but I do know this. I don't think anybody, when he was in the league, was like, well, he probably would have been a better player defensively if he wasn't catfished. I think he was what he was. He played. Had a career, the career's over, and now we're getting the explanation of 10 years ago what exactly happened. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think I want to sit and watch it from the standpoint of, well, now I get to change my opinion about Manti Te'o. I haven't thought about Manti Te'o in 8 years.
Yeah,
easily. Right? Like 8 or 9 years. Like, I haven't thought about him at all. Like, he didn't make a huge impact in the NFL. I mean, what am I supposed to do with this? I don't know what the purpose of it is. Now, he might have used it as some sort of therapy, but I don't know. It's 10 years later. If you're 31 years old, are you still like broken down over something? I mean, maybe because I've never had a scandal in college that was national news, right? Where I'm on the Today Show with Katie Couric, right? Being asked my sexual preference. He was being asked by Katie Couric if he was gay with this scandal. So I've never gone through that. So maybe for him, it's somewhat, again, some sort of therapy to get through that. I don't know. But I don't know if America has been chomping at the bit to find the real story behind this. I'm not sure.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
I should play a little DJ. I haven't done that this morning, giving you the artist, but many of you know this is CCR. Woodstock, 1969 on this date. Robert on Twitter showing me Motor City Throwback Thursday, a picture of Bob Seger playing in 1969 at the Oakland Mall in Michigan.
Ooh.
Oh, that's good. Can you imagine going to the mall and seeing Bob Seger in 1969? That would have been cool. By the way, I just told him on Twitter, Fire Lake is one of my favorite songs. I forgot how good that song is, and I was at the gym, and I had it on Apple Stream or Pandora or something like that while I was working out, and Fire Lake came on, and I was like, oh, God, I love that song, and it's one of my favorite songs by Bob Seger. So thanks, Robert. I appreciate the love and the Motor City Throwback Thursday. I like it when people take it. I like Robert's approach to Throwback Thursday. You guys do a Throwback Thursday, and then I will give you my own personal Michigan Throwback Thursday. I think, Robert, you're on watch for that. Every Thursday, try to find us a Michigan-oriented Throwback Thursday topic to talk about.
So one of these days, we'll do nothing but Michigan artists.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Real quick, I got one of the TVs is on something here on one of the ESPN channels in my studio, and I just saw a video, and this is like the third time I've talked about this, so please forgive me, but it's like repetition in this. I can't drill this point home enough, so I'm going to repeat it just to make sure that many of you get where I'm coming from. They just showed video of the Patriots and the Carolina Panthers fighting at joint practice because somebody hit Christian McCaffrey. Stop doing these things. McCaffrey quoted as saying, when it comes to joint practice fights, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. That's exactly right. Why in God's name would you put Christian McCaffrey in a joint practice? Look, again, I get it. I get it. I said this yesterday, so I'll repeat this. It's a point I'm really, really trying to emphasize. I get it. You have a preseason game.
I'm going to stop you. I don't get it.
I get the other argument. I will. I'll give you the argument. The argument to me is still not worthy of a joint practice. So you have a preseason game and you have starters and you go, okay, I'm not going to put my starters in a preseason game because it's a game setting, could get hurt, all of that. But I'll put them in a joint practice where there's some sort of control of the contact, if you will. Still you can't sack the quarterback and all that other stuff. So I'm going to give my starters some reps against first team live competition. So Dan Campbell said, for example, his starters can get 30 reps against the Colts. That's the team they're working out with this week. That he can get 30 reps against Colts, but he's not going to give him 30 reps in the preseason game coming up this weekend. He's not going to put him in for 30 plays. He'll put him in for like six. So but to me, I'm still like, that's still not good. It's still not even close to good enough for me. Like, why did the Panthers start a fight with the Patriots yesterday? Why? Because somebody took a shot at Christian McCaffrey. Of course they did. Of course they did. This is what happens in these contests. The problem that you have with joint practices, and it's like preseason, I wouldn't put my mega starters in a preseason game. I might be tempted to put them in one series, but that's it for three games. Because I don't know what's on the other side of the ball. Who's on the other side of the ball, and there's no value to what we're doing. We say it all the time. If Zach Wilson is playing the Eagles in week one and he's trying to go for a first down and he suffers a non-contact knee injury and he's out 4 weeks, fine. Because game one, week one, has value. He's trying to do something on the field to put his team in the best position to win. If the object of the preseason game is to not win the game, meaning in the end, I'll do the 2-minute drill and we'll play the game to try to win the game because it gives us opportunities to be in that situation. But in the end, I'm not trying to leave the game with a win at all costs because I'm taking all my starters out or I'm not playing them at all. So there's no currency there. But a week one injury, well, at least the attempt was to try to win a valuable game of a 17-week schedule. So in a joint practice, what do you have on the other side of the ball? Well, I know, maybe it's just me. If I have a start like Christian McCaffrey, right, who my entire future relies on. When we had the lady from Charlotte on to talk about the Panthers, what was the pretty much the overriding theme? Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. In the end, it doesn't matter. If they don't have Christian McCaffrey, they're not going to make a run towards the playoffs. That's it. They need Christian McCaffrey. And there's nobody or no combination of players that can replicate the statistical value of Christian McCaffrey or the value of him being able to break off and gain 70 yards on a catch for a touchdown. It's like the Titans with Derrick Henry. You can bring in two running backs. They can give you sort of the same sort of statistics that you want in your running game. But what both of them lack was the game-breaking moment that Derrick Henry had. Derrick Henry can hit the line of scrimmage, break two tackles, and be gone 75 yards for a touchdown. The two running backs may, in the end, combine for about the same amount of yards Derrick Henry would have gotten, but they can't give you the 80-yard touchdown bomb of breaking off the line and taking off. McCaffrey does that. There's nobody that can replicate that. So you put him in a joint practice. Now, what's on the other side of the joint practice, right? Well, you've got veteran defensive players, but then you've got young players. Some are not rookies. Some are guys that have bounced around the league a little bit and are looking for a home. So they're very aggressive. And some, because of the nature of what they're doing, can be over-aggressive. And so you're putting them in these situations in camp where everybody's, not everybody, because there's veterans that are pretty solid, but a lot of the guys that are playing are like fighting for a job, not just fighting for a starting job, they're fighting for a roster spot because they're worried that in about a week or so, they're going to be called in with their playbook. So you make a name for yourself. Now, I'm not saying that the Patriots, those Patriots players intentionally were trying to hurt Christian McCaffrey, but you can be over aggressive, as we know in sports, and cause an injury. You don't have to go, when I hit Christian McCaffrey, I'm going to make sure he's out for the season. That's not the intent. But the intent is to show your coaches how intense you are and how aggressive you are, and that could lead to injury. If you're Matt Rhule, why in God's name would you put Christian McCaffrey in that setting at all? I'm not saying wrap him up in bubble, but learn the value of what you've got. Learn the value of what you're doing. Is it necessary for him to be in a joint practice with the Patriots? I mean, in the end, if you can convince me that he absolutely needs to be out there, like, you don't get it. This offseason, he's hanging out with his model girlfriend, fiance, and my God, he put on 15 pounds and he could barely move. He's lumbering around like boom, 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 boom. So I got to put him in these joint practices to shed some weight and get his speed back. Okay, but I'm not believing that's happening, right? I think Christian McCaffrey has showed up in pretty good shape and is pretty much the same, you know, the same skills healthy as you need him to be. Why in God's name would you put him in a position where some young Patriot could run him over or put him or hurt him just being overly aggressive? The intent doesn't have to be there, but we all know that most injuries don't come from intent. They just come from contact. They just come from circumstances, right? When Brady got hurt in 2008, it wasn't like a guy was like, I'm going to take Brady's knee out. You just play football and things happen. So I just don't get it. And then you add on the fights, and they don't even have to be from you hit our star player. They just happen because it's hot, sticky, it's tiring, and there's an aggressive level to it that guys just, they get frustrated. So whenever I see these, I do it every year. I've said it when I was covering the Broncos too. I'd see a joint practice and go, why do they do this? again, if you can try to do that thing that coaches like to do, like, you know, yeah, but you don't get it. You ain't in the trenches. I get it. I understand. I didn't play in the NFL. But I mean, are they doing it in college ball? Like, is Nick Saban calling up Mike Leach and going, hey, why don't you bring Mississippi State up here for 3 days? Right? I don't think they are. So why are we doing it here? I don't know. Some coach probably thought it was a good idea years and years and years ago, and then every coach thought it was a good idea. And then nobody has the guts to go, you know what, this is stupid, because they don't want to look like they're different. It's like all it's like fish going in one direction, right into the bear's mouth. And no fish wants to go, hey guys, can we just turn around and go this other way?
Not every team does it, right?
Not every team does it, but eventually they all do it,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, they may not have it on the schedule this year, because again, it could be that some coaches are like, I don't want to do it every year. And then you call and you're like, you want to do a joint practice? Like, nah, we did one last year. And you're like, okay. And then you call another one. Oh, no, that's not going to work out. And then you're like, oh, okay, it's a bad week. It's sort of that, right? Where you just go, hey, while we're up in Nashville, why don't we come in on Wednesday and we can do a joint practice? And you go, okay, that'll be work. That'll be fine. Or, and some coaches go, ah, no, we just did one the week before, so we're not going to do one now. And you're like, oh, okay, you know. It's sort of that. It's not something the NFL says, and you guys will do a joint practice, and you'll do a joint practice, and you'll do a joint practice. Sort of controlled by the coaches. Are there coaches that don't like it? I'm sure there are. I mean, there's 32 of them. I'm sure not everyone is in agreement that these are valuable. But again, it's like, is anybody, like, everyone's like, oh, he hit Christian McCaffrey. Of course he hit Christian McCaffrey. Of course somebody
even
hit
if he bumped Christian McCaffrey, right? he didn't intend to hit him.
Right.
Everyone on the Panthers know, like, guys, you know, he needs to be in bubble wrap right now.
Mr. Glass. There's probably offensive linemen that probably start fights if you look at Christian McCaffrey, right, in a way that makes it look like you want to hurt him. Are you kidding? If I'm on the Panthers, I hire Secret Service protection. Are you kidding me? Like, if I was on the Panthers, let's say I'm a 38-year-old veteran. And I know I'm done. Like, I'm shoestring and tape. I am hanging on for dear life. Every day is an ice bath. I go to Christian McCaffrey and I go, here's the deal. We all raised some money for you. So we've hired Secret Service protection for you. You are not going to open a door. Heck, they're going to carry you downstairs. You are going to do nothing. You are going to arrive here in bubble wrap, and you are going to leave here bubble wrap times two. He's my only ticket to the postseason. If I'm a 38-year-old offensive lineman that is hanging on for the next year or two, Christian McCaffrey is the only way I get to experience playoff football. It is worth every nickel I could spend with other guys to give him a maid, a janitor. I don't care, not a janitor, a butler, security, gardener. Like, you're not touching a scissor. Like, the entire time you're doing this season. Are you kidding me? Wrapping that birthday gift? We got a guy to do it. Boiling that water for eggs? We've got a woman to do that. We got a guy that's going to help clean your garage. We got a lady that's going to help you shop for groceries. We got another person that's going to make sure you do nothing. You get out of bed. Heck, we might even have somebody, you know, tuck you in at night just to make sure you're sleeping. It would be worth every nickel if I was on that team to protect Christian McCaffrey. So naturally, if a second year, I still want to play football guy touches Christian McCaffrey or hits Christian McCaffrey in a way that I don't like, I'm drilling him into the ground. And that's what joint practices do, man. That's what they do. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joe Cocker, right?
Yes, sir.
He was one of the closing acts on this date, 1969 Woodstock. Yeah, this is what we're doing on our Throwback Thursday. It's been fun. I like the music, man. It's been good. By the way, my daughter's senior pictures came in yesterday. $300 for the package that you kind of want, where you're like sending them out to, you know, relatives and stuff.
Yeah.
What?
$300.
I swear to God. Listen, you know how they talk about wealthy people and they don't know the price of things? They're like, oh, I bet he doesn't even know how much a gallon of milk costs. I'm not wealthy. I have no idea how much a gallon of milk costs. Like, I don't, my wife, she's the one that does the food shopping. She's like, I know what we want. I had no idea. I gasped yesterday and my wife goes, yeah, that's how much they go for. I'm like, did we do this for Chris when he graduated? Yep, we did. I go, what? I go, really? But if you had said, if she had said, all right,
sleep?
I know. I'm like, she's going over because, well, this is the package that we want. We'll send this to grandma and grandpa, and this. Okay. And then we get this picture, and all right, very good. And then I go, okay, all right, so how much is that? I'm thinking $100. Like, this is how dumb I am. I swear to God, I am an imbecile when it comes to this stuff. I $300 and something. I literally, and she said it as matter of fact, like, this is what it costs. I go, unbelievable. I swear, I don't know Tell me how much a round of golf costs at like Greystone Country Club. I know how much that costs. Senior pictures for my kids? No clue. I was like, oh yeah, do they take cash? Like, I thought I'd just go in my wallet and grab some couple bucks. Oh God. And they're well done, and listen, the photographer did a great job. The lighting is perfect. They're beautiful pictures. I just don't know how much things cost. That's it. And again, it's not out of wealth. It's out of ignorance. That's how silly I get. Senior pictures. I can't wait till you guys have buy them 3 years straight. What are they going to cost when your little one graduates?